Okay, well, I am honored and really excited to have as our guest Nicholas J. Fuentes, who I believe is the most important political figure and current events figure in America. And he's also the most persecuted man in America at the age of 24. And he's got a group that has 30,000 followers and growing. And I've been on his podcast from Monday through Friday at cozy.tv. That's cozy.tv, where he's got 6,000 to 7,000 people watching his podcast every night often. I mean, it's usually 6,000 to 7,000 people. Anybody who's ever tried to attract people knows that's incredible. So he started, he's 23 years old. He started 5 years ago doing podcasts after he did a stint with the Trump campaign, I'm just learning. And Nicholas J. Fuentes, Nick, would you tell us what's happened to you since you were 18 in the last 5 years? And maybe why? Tell us why you think you've become the most persecuted man in the world. They won't take you on any major media, except here we're forcing it on due to the reasonable access law. They won't let you on any social media. They've made it impossible for you to take credit cards from anywhere in the world. They've stolen $500,000. The so-called Justice Department, or excuse me, was it the FBI? One of the government agencies stole $500,000 from your group's bank account. What has happened to you in the last 5 years, and how did you become not only, in my opinion, the most important political figure in the United States, but the most persecuted man in the world who's trying to get a message out? What has happened?
Well, thank you very much for the kind introduction. I appreciate the kind words, and it's a pretty long story, I have to say. It's been a pretty interesting journey. But yes, as you said, I got my start about 5 years ago in college. I was a volunteer on the Trump campaign up in New Hampshire, and I brought a lot of the college Republicans up there. I was 18, a freshman at Boston University in 2016, originally from Chicago, but went to school in Boston.
Okay.
And so the first thing I did when I got on campus is I got together all the college Republicans. I sent emails to all the different CR groups, Harvard, Northeastern, BC, BU, Suffolk, all the colleges. And I organized a group called Boston Students for Trump. And every weekend in October, we went up to New Hampshire. And we did door knocking. We did phone banking. I think I brought something like 100 people up there. And obviously, we didn't win in New Hampshire. I thought that technically we won. I think there was some cheating in 2016 and in some of the states that were closer that we lost.
I agree with you because people aren't aware that except in the five small counties, I think it is in New Hampshire, the entire country is counted by secret computer counts of only three companies, Dominion, Hart, and ES&S. And this is protected. In other words, the public does not know this because all the major networks and news media, including Fox, does not tell them that all our votes are being counted in secret. So I agree with you that there was cheating against Trump in 16. Of course, he won the 2020 election, but there was massive, not only cheating on computer vote fraud, but also in the illegal mail-in ballots that are illegal because the chain of custody is broken. But continue. So you're up there organizing these guys for Trump.
Yes. So I was organizing, and, you know, I met some people on the campaign, and I got kind of connected with the Boston Trump scene. And I got linked up with Right Side Broadcasting Network, which they were very well known in 2016 because they were the only ones broadcasting all the Trump events.
Okay.
Mainstream media wouldn't cover it, but RSBN would. And RSBN was just run by a couple of guys from Alabama, Joe and Jacob Seals. They just went out there, got cameras, and they just started covering the events. And they were really the only ones. And they were famous at the time. They would show the crowds.
Yeah.
You know, the mainstream media wouldn't show how big the rallies were, and RSBN would. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was important. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and those were great guys. Those were true believers, Trump loyalists, which was exactly my crowd. And so I got connected with them, and they brought on a whole slate of original shows after the election. You know, there weren't any rallies after the election, not until the midterms. So they said, okay, well, how can we keep it fresh? What can we do? And so they brought on a bunch of people to make shows. And I knew Cassie Dillon, who was going to school nearby at the time. and she knew Jacob Seals and Joe Seals, and she was doing a show, and she said, "Huh, well, I know this kid who's got some charisma, and he's did a show in high school and did radio in high school." So she introduced me, and so I started a show. And it's funny, you know, initially I said, "I want to call it the Nicholas J. Fuentes Show." And they said, "Okay, well, that's too long. They said, that's too many syllables." I was like, "Okay, how about Nick Fuentes?" And they go, "Well, no one really knows who you are." I said, "Okay." And then I watched the Trump inaugural, which was January 20th, 2017.
Right.
And if you remember, he said, "A new vision will govern our land. It's going to be only America first." Mm-hmm. And I heard that and I was like, that's it. I mean, that describes me. That's what I'm about. I'm not really, I mean, I am conservative, but you know, a lot of conservatives aren't really who they say they are. I said, I'm America first. That describes what I am.
Right.
That's what I called the show. And so it started out, the shows weren't very big because most of their audience came there for the rallies. And so none of the shows on RSBN did particularly well. I got like 100 live viewers every night and a lot of technical difficulties. You know, I was in a college dorm, so it wasn't a great like environment to do the show actually. But so I did that for a time. And then I wound up actually at the Charlottesville rally in August 2017. And I know that's very controversial. It's very polarizing. But, you know, like Donald Trump said, there were a lot of people that were there to defend the Robert E. Lee monument. You know, people.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a complaint. That was like the January 6th. Excuse me. Them claiming there's a January 6th insurrection. That was a media created thing. When Trump said there's good people on both sides, I thought, are there any good people on the other side? They're all pro until the ninth month. But no, that was a complete. They mainly wanted to keep the speeches that would have been given there off of going viral on the internet.
Right, and the point of the rally was the city of Charlottesville in Virginia. They were going to rename the historic Robert E. Lee Park, and take down the statue, which is something that I'm against. I'm against the erasure of the history and the destruction of monuments, and you know, now it's just out of control. They're going after Jefferson and Lincoln, and Trump said that would happen, and I said the same thing at the time. You start with the so-called, you know, the real bad guys, and where does it end? Now they're taking down Washington and Jefferson and Lincoln. Anyway, so I went there.
And when you see your history being torn down, you know a lot of communists have gotten control of your country.
That's right. That's what they do. That's what they did in Russia 100 years ago. That's what they do in every country.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So I went there for those reasons. I'll admit, I mean, there were some people there that were not really my cup of tea and everything,
right.
But,
I know.
But it was, yeah. So after that event, I became radioactive, you know, as a result of the media fallout, everybody who was at that rally or was identified at that rally got fired, doxxed, harassed, ostracized. And that was like a big moment in my career because up until
some of them were imprisoned.
Yes, that's right. Unjustifiably. I know at least one person committed suicide because of the harassment.
Wow.
And you know, nobody ever talks about that. They talk about, people, whatever you think, exercising their First Amendment, which is perfectly legal and actually what our country's about.
Right.
But they don't talk about Antifa who comes there with baseball bats and bags of urine and stuff like that. You know, they just talk about the bad guys, but the so-called bad conservatives.
Yeah.
But that was a big turning point in my career because up until that point, I had been a relatively mainstream guy and everybody who was at Charlottesville had this guilt by association, like you said, this media created circus. And so it became very difficult for me. But I was kicked out of RSBN and it was sort of mutual. You know, I had been kind of looking for a way out because like I said, I mean, I couldn't really control my show. It was on their channel. And they basically told me, we can't have you on the network. This is a big scandal. They were trying to get in the White House press briefing room to be able to record the press briefings. And they said that was going to mess with that. So they said, okay, well, you can't do your show anymore. So I think a week later, I started my show just on my own YouTube channel. I said, okay, well, you know, I kept the same setup, same green screen, same everything. And I just did it on my own. And so I did my show for a long time and I started to articulate really a different kind of conservatism where what you really get from a lot of these conservatives, even though Trump won the election, even though he took over the GOP, you really still get the same messaging of Mitt Romney and John McCain. You get the same neocon, you get the same libertarian stuff. And I'm not a libertarian. I'm not a neocon. I'm an America First nationalist. And so my show was about immigration, and it was about crime, and it was about the Middle East. It was about all these issues, really, that Trump ran on. And I see the big things that Trump ran on as building the wall and shutting down immigration, protectionism and stopping free trade, allowing America to reindustrialize, and non-intervention to stop the foreign wars, stop the capture of the State Department and the Pentagon by NATO and by foreign interest lobbies. It was about America first versus globalism, and that was my show. And so I went on doing my show for a couple of years, and I steadily gained an audience. You know, a lot of people noticed what I was doing, and I think that there was a real appetite for that, because when you look at the offerings, like I said, from the conservative pundits, there's not a whole lot of that. There's a lot of the usual suspects. There's a lot of the people that have been around for decades and decades
And Nick, it's like they're in a little playpen. They're not allowed to go outside of their playpen. And they cover a lot of stuff like, oh, Democrats first, Republicans. But they do not cover a lot of stuff that Americans need to hear. And I'm talking about Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. They were like in a playpen they were not allowed to go out of. And you go outside that playpen.
That's right. Well, because we've got to be honest about what's going on. And what's going on is that it's not just the Democrats and the liberals. It's both sides. It's the so-called conservative establishment and the liberal establishment working together to really deliver the same policies for 30 years, whether you get Bush or Obama or whoever you get, it's the same basket of policies. And right. Fox News, you know, just brought on Caitlyn Jenner, so-called Caitlyn Jenner. Like, yeah. I mean, that tells you what's up. So right. Like you said, I was sort of stepping outside the lines and saying a lot of the things that are not really politically correct, that you're not supposed to say. And I made a lot of enemies because of that. A lot of people didn't like me. And really, my big claim to fame, I guess my breakout moment came in 2019, autumn 2019. Charlie Kirk, who's the founder, head of Turning Point USA, which is, I think, the biggest student conservative organization in the country, he went on a campus tour. He went on a speaking tour on the college campuses. And he would go and do his speeches, and he would go around saying things. One of the most famous lines, he went to one school and said that he thought that we should staple a green card to the diploma of every foreign student studying in America, which, if you don't know what that means like legalize and bring in as immigrants all the tens of millions or millions of students from China or India or wherever studying here, which is like, I mean, that's mass immigration. And I remember seeing that and being shocked and saying, this is supposed to be the Trump group. This is supposed to be, I thought Charlie Kirk was a pro-Trump guy. I thought this was a pro-Trump group. And he's going around saying, like, yeah, let's bring in basically limitless, and he said other kinds of immigration too, worker visas and the students that are here from other countries, let's give them green cards. I remember thinking, like, this is insane. And so I talked about that on my show, just reminding people, like, this isn't exactly conservative. And so my followers started to go to his speaking events, and they would do a speech, and they do a Q&A panel. And my followers would go to these events, and they'd get in line, and they'd say, hey, and it's funny because, of course, when people like Kirk and Shapiro and the others, when they do their speaking tours, they expect questions from the left. They expect some, like, 19-year-old with, like, blue hair, some, like, psycho-feminist to go up and say, like, tell me why you think there's two genders. And then it's like, oh, you know, it's totally blown out. Wow, you got debated into the ground on why, like, there's such a thing as men and women. They don't expect people coming to their thing with a MAGA hat on and a rosary in their hand saying, hey, why do you support open borders, essentially? Why do you support mass immigration? And so it was a hit right out of the gate. This went viral. It was everywhere. You know, on these questions, it got to the point where every event that he did, the entire Q&A line would be people to watch my show. And I would be crafting the questions on my show. I'd tell people, okay, we're going to strategize. Ask him this, this, and this. Ask him when he said this. And the three – the main points that we sort of coalesced around were specifically his support for mass immigration, his support for social liberalism. You know, he would have people on the stage like Rob Smith, who's an open homosexual, and he would go up there and say that he's black and he's a veteran. He would say, I'm America's favorite gay black veteran. And we'd say, okay, well, you know, I mean, listen, we're not like hateful people or anything, but we're Christian. And our religion is against the LGBT.
No.
We don't think that's moral. And so, you know, it's not to say that, you know, should we say that we don't want gay people voting Republican or something? I mean, whatever. But it's like, why would you put that on the stage and celebrate that? We don't celebrate that. It's wrong.
Right.
And so that was part of it. And then we would also talk about his support for the wars, his endless support for American intervention in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were the three main points, was social liberalism, his support for mass immigration, and his America Last foreign policy. And
well,
over time,
it's one of the things that with the mainstream so-called conservatives that I'm sure got you in trouble. You guys don't hit it real hard when I've listened, but you say, or when I went to your America First convention down in Orlando, but you say it's not cool to shill for Israel. And this idea that this one country, while they're committing what I consider to be a slow genocide against the Palestinians, I know people in Palestine, to never even analyze their policy is really not American. We don't have free speech except on commenting on one or two countries, what they're doing.
That's right. Well, and you know, they always bring up the usual stuff. If you criticize this country or something, you're a hater. You know, you must be a hater, or they'll say you're a leftist or something. And you're exactly right. It's George Washington's farewell address. No foreign entanglements.
Right.
And it seems like that's we're the only ones applying that consistently. And I apply that to NATO. I don't want us to be involved in NATO's war in Ukraine or whatever.
Right.
And
right.
It also applies to the Iraq war, the Israel's intervention in Syria. Bashar al-Assad's not my enemy. You know,
right.
Liberal media is. You know, Facebook is the one that's banning everybody. Like that's the communists, like you said, in our country, not Bashar Assad. So you're right. That was a big part of it. And, you know, long story short, I mean, it went for a couple months and he wound up reversing a lot of those positions. He wrote an op-ed renouncing his support for the green cards for the foreign students. And he's changed his rhetoric since then. He really did. But I was severely punished. I was blacklisted. I was totally kicked out of the conservative, you know, whatever, the milieu there. They all hate me. Shortly after that, I was banned on YouTube. And that's really where this cascading series of events started. I was banned on YouTube. I was banned from PayPal, all the payment processors, Reddit, TikTok, Discord.
Can I make a statement and you react to it, okay?
Sure.
That was one reason, the fact that you were just saying, let's have some fair discussion and fair play in the Middle East and not be becoming part of all these wars. But I think the reason that you're about to explain what happened to you is that it's okay to, and I was down at your meeting and there was mostly young white men. There was 10 or 20 very well-dressed black men. There was young guys. There was 50 or so women, maybe a little more than that. And there was about 50 old guys like me. Pete Pop Heracles, the American Free Press, drove down from Maryland. He said, I got to see with my own eyes that there's 1,200 young people at a meeting. He said he'd been going to meetings for the last 10 years. They're all old people. So, and anyway, but you're allowed to organize for black people. You're allowed to, and I'm not against black people or Hispanics or Orientals, but where I think you most got in trouble with the powers that be that run our media and our banking system and the money is you also invited white young Christian men to organize. And when I went to your America First conference in Florida in February 25th, I think, of this year, 2022, you said our secret ingredient our secret ingredient is young white Christian men. You said, you know what white people are good at, white men are good at? Building things. Okay. So for years, I avoided talking about white this or white people because I said, well, I don't want to get any bad feeling with the, with between blacks and whites. But now the media is beating down on white people so severely in the last 2 years that somebody has to answer, and you came. And I think that's why you most got in trouble is encouraging young white men to organize and save the country. Maybe you can react to that opinion of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, a lot of what I've said so far is things that, it's pretty non-controversial. And it's a lot of things that even Trump supporters are saying on Fox or are saying in mainstream media and so on. But really the thing that makes me different and the thing that is why my name cannot be uttered in Fox News, cannot be uttered in mainstream conservative media is because you're right, because I will talk about the white people. That's the one group of people that nobody wants to talk about. And that is the Republican base. That's the conservative base. It also happens to be the people that made this country. It's the people that founded this country, settled this country, built this country. I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm not afraid to say it. I don't think it's controversial. It's just factually true. And all the time you get conservatives that want to run away from that. And ultimately, it's largely white conservatives and a white Republican constituency that elect leaders and support leaders running away from their own people, running away from their own, again, their own voters, their own constituents, their own backers. And it just isn't right. And you're right. When you look at what's happening in the country, you cannot interpret it without this racial lens. There, we know that the Democrat coalition is anti-white. People call it everything else. It's critical race theory. It's Marxist. It's this and that. All of those things it may be. But also, we must say explicitly, it's against white people. You know, look at Cory Booker.
The only thing that Kamala Harris, our Duncy, low IQ vice president, who was put in again by all kinds of computer fraud and mail-in fraud, that's all she does is everything she says is trying to mobilize non-whites against whites.
Yeah, and it's not just her. It's her. It's Lori Lightfoot. It's Cory Booker. It's this new generation of militant young, the so-called POC, who've been radicalized in colleges. They've been pushed into this by the media. And you get this generation of these new leaders proclaiming a new America where white people are going to be second-class citizens. And again, that's something that's like, again, for some reason very controversial, but you'll never hear that kind of thing on any of the major mainstream things. They don't want to talk about race. Our enemies talk about race. It's important to them, and they're the ones running the show. We need to talk about those things.
Sanders, we did a show last week with Pete Papaheracles, who came to your convention, and he's written a book called America's Racial Powder Cake. But we did Defending White Civilization with brought 95% of the invention. Again, I hope the blacks and the Orientals increase their number of inventions. But in historical fact, 95% of the and plus of the great inventions physically were done by white people of European descent. You have rule of law, which has been in white societies and really struggling at almost everywhere else except maybe Japan. You have Christianity was brought to in the Catholic Church. I'm Catholic myself, was brought to the humanity by the white people of Europe after the apostles brought it to them. So these things, but if you listen to mainstream media, the reason I started to speak up about it is the young people who are white must think we should be hanging our heads in shame all day long, and you don't do that. You teach people how to not hang their head, the white people how to not hold their head in shame all day.
Right. We want white people to have the same love for themselves that every other race is encouraged to. We hear all day long, black is beautiful, future is female, all this kind of stuff. But the white man is told, you know, you should be ashamed of who you are. You're a terrorist. You're a racist. You're a rapist. That is all the programming from the media. And it's so wrong. And ultimately, I mean, I came to consider this to be very important because I think about having kids one day. And when I have kids, they're going to be white. And my white kids are going to be growing up in a society that hates them, in a society where they're told to be ashamed of themselves and hate themselves. And it's especially – it's wrong for that to happen to anybody. But – and I said this on my show, it's especially wrong because it was our ancestors that actually founded this place. So right. That's not to say – it's not to say we're white supremacists or something like that, but it is to say that it's especially wrong that this is our home. This is a home that our ancestors made for us. And not only are you going to have that kind of racial hatred, but racial hatred against the people that created, like you said, the inventions, the wealth, the prosperity, the kind of culture here. It just isn't right. And nobody wants to say it. Nobody wants to defend white people as white people. They want to call it anything else and divert that into some other conversation. Let's talk about it. I mean, our enemies are perfectly willing to articulate in racial terms their hatred for us, and we can't defend ourselves on that basis. We can't say white people should have the same dignity and the same rights and the same respect that anybody else has. We've got to couch it in all these other terms and pander to other groups.
And, you know, more and also the inventions and the building of good societies by white people have actually created the opportunity now for all people, all ethnic groups, all races, all countries to rise together in what really is an age of plenty with technology and everything where we can all do well in the future. But the basis of that historically has mostly been provided to mankind by white people of European descent.
That's right. It should be a you're welcome, you know. They should be saying thank you, you know, rather than giving us the finger and attacking the elderly. They should be saying thank you, you know. And
the next, I've said before, the next words out of Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton's mouth to white people should be thank you.
That's right. Yeah, gratitude. How about a little graciousness? And then we can all get along. But instead, we get the hatred. Yep. But so you're right. So those are the kinds of things.
So did you start getting into these subjects back when you were 19 after you got kicked out of the original media group you were with?
Yes. I tried to play the game that a lot of people in media do where they say like 60% of what they believe and they just will never tell a soul the 40% that's going to get them fired from their job or kicked out or whatever.
Yeah.
I tried to play that game, and I realized over time we just need some honesty. Somebody just need – I look at a guy like Trump. Here's a guy where they told him, you can't say that. That's too controversial. And he had the courage, and he had the follow-through and faithfully executed his vision. And people showed up for it. They said, you know what? He's speaking his mind. And that's actually how I think too. And that's what we call the silent majority. This majority of people that we all know what's right. We all know what's up, but are just too afraid to say it because, you know, people have jobs and people have lives and so on. And so I basically looked at that and said, you know what? The writing is on the wall here. It's a matter of time before people wake up and see what's going on. We've got to just tell it how it is. And I figured if we could just say it in a way that is reasonable, if we could say this message in a way that's reasonable and have a good presentation, it doesn't matter how much the media smears us. The spell has been broken. Trump showed what they're about. They have no credibility and they lie. And I thought, here's a unique opportunity where we can kind of slide this in past the goalie, whereas historically saying these kinds of things would get you immediately labeled a racist or something and buried alive. Trump proved, okay, those tactics are dishonest. And our enemies use them to silence conservatives. And if people understand that, then maybe they're ready for a message that's a little bit more right-wing and a little bit more Christian than what they've been hearing before. And so I basically went all in. I said, you know what? I'm not holding back. I'm going to say what I say, and I'm not a hater. You know, I like you, I'm Catholic. I feel like if I have heart here, like that will shine through, and the signal will get out.
Yeah.
And in spite of everything it has.
Well, I mean, and you with your group, which is 30,000 plus and growing, 6,000-7,000 most weeknights tune in to hear your analysis of the news the day and anything else that's on your mind. Sometimes you go on for 2 or 3 hours and people are still with you. So the point is that the fact that you have been willing to speak honestly and with heart and, as you say, like a real person, you've survived, and it's only going to get better from here, God willing. And but again, you've broken the taboos and have really thought ahead of things I've articulated. You know, I think about this stuff almost, you know, a lot of the time, almost all the time. And when someone is formulating, especially when you're 24 years old, the oldest guys don't always have the answers, let me tell you. So I was grateful to hear that you are articulating things that I had not articulated, such as you've said, we will rule those America firsters like us will rule this country in your lifetime. Now, that's a bold thing to say, but people need to start thinking that way. And you've said a lot of other things that I have not heard anyone else articulate. So you're already starting. So that's when you started to run into trouble, when you started to just say, I'm just going to speak my mind on this stuff with a kind heart. And I heard you and I know you do that. And then you started to run into more and more trouble, huh?
Yes, because then, of course, I was at the Stop the Steal rallies. I was a big participant in that in 2020.
Yep.
And I really ran into trouble all throughout 2020 and 2021 because of these narrative wars, you know, unprecedented level of information control surrounding the pandemic, election fraud, BLM. That was really the year that they clamped down, I believe, in preparation for that election.
Right. And they cut – everybody's got to think about this. And it's – I work with Jewish people that are fighting this tyranny. There's plenty of them. They're always among the best that are fighting. But I've said many times on my commercials and shows, the predominant faction that runs every major TV and radio station in the United States, runs the Federal Reserve and all the money, is a – communist billionaire Jewish banker type faction that's promoting communism for you and me. So, you know, that's just the way it is. I that's the last thing I wanted to find when I was young like you, that was the case. I'd rather it be Arabs or Germans or people that the Jewish media has taught that it's okay to hate them, you know. But in fact, it's this criminal element, not all the Jewish people, but at the top, a relatively small criminal element that runs our money and our media. And of course, they look at you, Nicholas J. Fuentes, as encouraging white young Christian men to get involved with the politics of our country. They are more afraid of that than anything else. They're even more afraid of the organizing white people and young white people than they are of Christians, because I think they think Christianity is dying. And when you look around a lot of places, it does seem to be. And I never thought, I hope I'm not repeating myself on this show, but down at your convention in Orlando, Florida, February 25th, I think, of this year, 2022, is your third one. You had 1,200 people. I never thought in my lifetime I would see 1,200 young men rise to their feet four times down there during your five-hour convention or conference and chant, "Christ is King! Christ is King! Christ is King!" Everyone should go to the proper website, which you'll give us, to watch all the speeches of America First Conference 3 from this year. And you had Marjorie Taylor Greene, a congresswoman, come there and speak, and they're still griping about that on CNN and MSNBC. You had another congressman named Gosar from Arizona give you a long-distance message. So it was an incredible convention, and as I say, I never expected to see young men stand up, 1,200 of them in unison, and vigorously chant, "Christ is King."
Yeah, that's one of the things that I'm the most proud of, is how the Christian message really was present throughout the entire event. Yeah. And it's incredible, because how they describe the conference in the media is they've said that was a Nazi event, that was a pro-Putin event, that was a white nationalist event. But the only and maybe the most prominent theme that was there in every speech, in every part of the event, was the Christianity.
Yes.
Element. And that was from the beginning, when we had a Catholic priest bless the food at the beginning, through every single speech. Every speech talked about the importance of having Christ at the center. And you're right. I think that, and we know how it is. We hear this term from the conservatives. They call it Judeo-Christian. That was really when I realized something was wrong, because I thought, wait a second. What are the Jewish people? Aren't those the people that didn't accept Jesus as their savior? Aren't those the people that don't believe he's the son of God? So how then, you know, how can Judeo and Christian comprise the same sort of set of ideas if Christianity is the premise that Jesus Christ was the Messiah, and the Jewish faith or the Jewish group says they're defined by their opposition of that. They think he was not the Messiah. It just doesn't really work.
Right. That phrase became really prominent after Vatican II, which was what I think was the false council from 1962-1965 in the Vatican. And I'm losing my train of thought. I'll cut this out of the tape. But that Judeo-Christian became very prominent then. And in modern times, it really makes no sense. It is a total contradiction, but it's kind of trying to get people to imply in their mind that the Jewish role in the Old Testament, which ended when Christ came, and as he's saying, most of the Jews rejected him, that now somehow they're kind of our friends and brothers, politically speaking or religiously speaking, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, and to me what's important, because, you know, I know there's a lot of Christians and a lot of Protestants who will say, like, oh, well, you know, they're sort of the first part and we're the second part and something like that. Well, I want leaders that believe Christ is King. I mean, again, people may say that's a bigoted position or something. I think that this is a Christian nation. And I think that if we want to have Christian virtues and Christian society and Christian laws, we should have Christian rulers, or at least people that are sympathetic to Christ, they're not anti. And I think that's what you'll find with a lot of these liberal groups, and particularly a lot of liberal Jewish groups. Even somebody like Ben Shapiro, His position on Jesus is that he was a rebel who got killed for his trouble, which is just blasphemous. And it's like, if that guy's influencing so many Christians in the country, I don't actually think that's a great thing.
No, no, and he spent a whole show, at least one, maybe more, attacking you, devoting it to telling people, stay away from Nick Fuentes. He's not the real Nick. My youngest son calls Ben Shapiro Ben Shilpiro. I mean, I do not consider Ben Shapiro, even though he talks a good game and many of the issues, I do not consider him on our side personally.
Yeah, no, I don't either. I think he's, he doesn't agree with us. He's in favor of intervention in the Middle East. He's not really opposed to mass legal immigration. He's not a Christian. Where's the overlap here? But yet, he's one of the most influential conservatives in the country. And that just isn't right. And I think it's only like that because anybody else that would potentially rise up with an alternative, more a message that aligns more with where conservative Christians are at, is silenced and removed from the conversation. And I'm the perfect example of that. It's like you said, because we have 1,200 young white guys screaming Christ is King on their feet, because we're talking about the issues that they don't like to talk about, and some people might say, oh, well, you're coping or something. I've been banned from Twitter, YouTube, every social media platform you can imagine, Facebook, Instagram. I'm banned from all the payment processors. We've tried, Dan Bongino's got a cancel-proof payment processor. We're banned from that. Gab has a payment processor. We're banned from that. We're not even banned from the processing so much as we're banned from the banks that underwrite the processing. I'm on the federal no-fly list, like you said earlier, the FBI.
Weren't you going to the second America First conference in Florida? They sold you a ticket, if I understand it right. You get to the airport ready to get on the plane, and they say, oh, by the way, you've been put on the no-fly list. Is that what happened?
So it was a little bit after that. It was a couple of months after the second conference. And yes, I wasn't even able to print the ticket. I showed up to the airport and I got there and they couldn't print me the pass. So I go to the desk and I say, hey, like, I can't get my pass online. I couldn't get it at home. I can't get it at this kiosk. So I go to the desk and say, hey, what's up? Let me get a pass. I paid for my flight. I'm ready to go. It leaves in an hour. I got my bags. And so they call security. They're on the phone for an hour. They get off the phone and say, they don't even tell me you're on. They don't even, that's the funny thing. My experience, they say, well, you can't fly today. And I go, okay, well, what does that mean? I'm a paying customer. I bought my ticket, right? They say, well, yeah, you just can't fly. I'm like, okay, so is that the airline? Is that the airport? Is that the TSA? They go, well, we can't tell you. And it's like you come up against this brick wall. And I called the TSA. And the TSA said the same thing. We don't disclose the no-fly list is classified law enforcement information, even for the people on it. So they can't even disclose to you if you're on that list.
Again, this is another sign that our country is being run by communists. And so people know where to look. I always tell them that 98% of the time, that is billionaire Jewish banksters and their allies in New York, London, and D.C., who are promoting communism for you and me. They plan to run it. But that when they won't even tell you that, it's like we're in a communist society where information is even kept from the people that are being affected.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's how they operate. It's part of this giant managerial bureaucratic structure, which is just impenetrable. And you encounter this in the private sector. You encounter this in the public sector. And everybody knows what it feels like to be crushed. We don't really live in one of these so-called republics or democracies. We live in like an empire. And we all know when you go to Walmart, when you go to a major airline, when you go to Bank of America, when you're going up against the government, we all know what it feels like to be crushed and have no recourse and just sort of be a subject of these giant institutions that are now running our country, totally disconnected from the plight of ordinary people. And that is what I've come up against with the private censorship and the private financial sanction, as well as the persecution from the government. And like, that's something that I've just shared my story with people, and people say, like, they don't even believe it. They don't even believe that that happens, because so many people are under the impression that this is like Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Like, they have this very naive view that this is like a capitalist, open, free society. You know, what are you talking about? We won the Cold War. This is the triumph of liberal democracy.
And they say, you're the freest people ever.
That's right. And then you get a guy like me where, and, you know, by the way, I've never committed a crime. I've never been charged with a crime. I've never committed a crime. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't steal. I've never had any trouble with law enforcement. All that I've done is talk. That's all I've done is exercise the First Amendment in the Constitution, the first one, which is speak, assemble, practice religion, freedom of the press. You know, that's all. Yeah. And for that, because I've said the wrong things, I've been crushed. And people go like, what? Like you said, we're the freest people ever. Well, how free really are you? And, you know, people can find my views distasteful. They can agree. They can disagree. But to see the kind of coordinated, concerted effort by all those institutions to crush, and by the way, a young man, you know, and I know that's, you know, it is what it is, but it's like, okay, here's, I was 18 when I started this. You get a young guy with a small YouTube show, and you see the extent to which Bank of America and the TSA and the DHS and the DOJ and Facebook, Meta, one of the biggest companies in the world, Twitter, Google, all linking arms and holding hands to silence my voice. It really tells you what the real political climate is.
And that's why I call you the most important political man and current events man in the United States, because you are organizing, which I could never do. I mean, I tried, and many other people have not done what you've done. You're organizing a growing movement of young people and waking them up to what's happening and urging them to get involved in the country's public events. And that is what these top deep state operatives fear above all else. That's why you're the most important political figure of any age in the United States. And that's why they've come down with a ton of bricks on you on all sides, which most people wouldn't believe is possible because they're unaware of the cohesiveness of this shadow government or deep state, which Donald Trump has referred to as the deep state. Now, tell them, to make sure I don't know if I got it exactly right, but did the FBI come into one of your bank accounts for the America First Movement and steal $500,000 a few months ago, and they're still holding it? And you may be in litigation on it, but didn't that happen?
Yeah, so this was January last year. The DOJ stepped into my personal bank account, actually, not even the...
No, wait a minute. This is of 2021?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so January 2021, the DOJ stepped in and froze $500,000 in my personal bank account.
And by the way, because I've heard this, people have kind of tried to smear you by saying, oh, he has big secret backers. You said at the convention down in Florida that you do not have big secret backers, that these come as small donations from your 30,000 and growing followers.
That's right. Yeah, I have no major backers. You know, I'm the America First Foundation, the organization I run is a 501c4, and we disclose all of that information to the IRS. You know, there's reporting standards for that. There's a lot of scrutiny. Yes. So if that was going on, it would be, people would see it. It's very transparent.
Yeah. Yeah.
The money for example, our biggest sponsor for AFPAC 3, I don't mind telling you, we probably spent $250,000 on that conference. And our biggest backer is a friend of mine who's like just a crypto millionaire. He's like my age and just made all his money in Bitcoin. And that's like a perfect example of, you know, when you look at the CPAC is sponsored by Google, you know. I don't know if they still are, but years ago, Google and they've got all these giant organizations. Charlie Kirk, 40 million. Where does that money really come from? That's a good question.
Right.
But we, you know, we're small potatoes, obviously, compared to that. We're just getting started. But our backers, it's almost all small dollar. It's these young guys, a lot of them in high school, many of them in college, chipping in $3 every night on the show, $5, $10, whatever. Yeah. The ticket was $150 for AFPAC 3. For CPAC, it's like a grand to attend every day. It's like $1,000. We charge $150 for the ticket.
Right. I bought one and I was there. And perhaps the most remarkable political event I have ever been to in since 1972. And by the way, if your friend became a millionaire in Bitcoin, he's my hero. We got some Bitcoin, but it won't go up. They're staying low right now, but we're hoping. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Hopefully so. Yeah, so, and that just goes to show, you know, people, whenever you see somebody like myself, I think that's even part of the tactic is to insinuate, oh, that's shady business or something. It's the classic reputational slander, the classic, that's their MO. That's their operation every time is the slander. But this is a case of, I was at the Capitol on January 6th. I didn't go inside, but I was there for the rally on the Ellipse at the White House.
Right.
I was a prominent guy in Stop the Steal. Leading up to that, I was at almost every one. I was in Atlanta. I was in Phoenix. I was in Lansing, Harrisburg. I went to the only one I didn't hit, I think, was Madison. And this was their operation. After the 6th, they went after everybody. Lots of friends of mine, Alex Jones, Ollie Alexander, you know,
Roger,
all the people.
Roger Stone.
That's right, Roger Stone, and even the Trump White House and the people that were on the campaign and the legal team, Rudy Giuliani, Don Jr., Trump himself. A lot of my friends who were in the White House, same thing, got subpoenaed and other things done to them. So, you know, and that whole thing on January 6th and the Stop the Steal, they stole the election. They knew it. We knew it. And there was actually a very interesting time because we were in uncharted waters, challenging the integrity of a major election,
right.
Possibility that an illegitimate president is seated. Like they knew the stakes, in other words, on that day.
And that's why they brought in 25,000 soldiers to guard the just like a third world country that's illegally overthrown the government. They had all those 25,000 protecting Biden and the White House. My opinion is that the insurrectionists were the senators who voted to regularize or recognize that fraudulent vote. And I don't care what the rules are in Electoral College. If you're a sitting office holder, you cannot, shall we say, authorize or regularize or recognize fraudulent vote counts. And there were so many, all those 62 suits that were brought by the Trump faction and his friends that judges threw out, those judges should be in jail because every one of those had merit. And so I think the insurrectionists, in order to cover the real insurrectionists, the senators, in my opinion, they went after our view, who as American citizens were peacefully protesting what was going on without being violent at all, by the way.
Yes. Well, and it just goes to it. The point is, who really stole this election? They try to claim that it was Trump trying to steal the election. And we all know what happened on election night. We watched it. I mean, I watched it live.
Right.
It was mathematically unbeatable lead in at least three of the swing states when they stopped the count.
Right.
And then hours later, 4 a.m., I was in bed. I watched it happen. Ballot dumps, Milwaukee, and then Detroit, and then the pipe burst in Atlanta. Give me a break. Half
right.
The ballots are mail-in. And they don't even conduct a proper investigation. I remember I just debated a leftist on this the other week. You know, he's saying, oh, well, I think Trump's a sore loser. I'm like, sore loser? Half the ballots were – there's no – you have a ballot is solicited. It's sent out. And then it just shows up in a drop box. Those are half the – and we're supposed to just say, oh, I assume the person who submitted this ballot is the same person that it was intended for. There's no signature checks. There may be duplicates. I mean, we know that there's problems. They don't even do the mail-in ballots in Europe for this very reason.
There were no mail-in ballots in the United States before 1996. Opposing computer fraud since 1979 has been – potential computer vote fraud has been my main issue, you might say. And I lost my train of thought when I was talking about the dominance of the Jewish bankster, millionaire, and billionaire types in the leading the deep state. But that deep state, that shadow government – didn't finish my thought. They censored the president of the United States. He could not get a message out after January 6th on any of the social media or on Fox News or on the rest of the big cable. They censored not just you and me, but the president of the United States. That's how powerful they are. And they really got to be arrested because they're committing treason against the people of the United States, in my humble opinion. By the way, I forgot to say, Nick Fuentes is not responsible for anything I say or anything other people say on my program. He's only, and I say this for all my guests, he's only responsible for what he says. So those of you that want to attack him because of something I said, you're just being unfair and unjust. But go ahead, Nick. But when did this start to, so you've been banned from social media forums that I've never heard of.
That's right. Yeah, I've been banned from things that most people haven't heard of because, you know, it's not even just a platform problem. It really is a tech problem. And what I mean by that is people, their engagement with the technology is they'll make a Twitter account and then they'll, consume content on Twitter. Well, there's so much that goes into Twitter. There's a domain registrar that registers Twitter.com as the address for that website. There are servers where the Twitter website is hosted. There's payment processors for where Twitter will, obviously the banks and the merchant and gateway that are going to process the credit cards on Twitter. And so there's all this stuff behind the scenes. And so I've been banned from all the platforms. I mean, I don't think there's one that I'm, besides Telegram and the ones that are explicitly free speech, I'm banned from all of them. I'm also then banned from all the back-end services. I'm banned from the domain registrars. I'm banned from several banks, Bank of America, U.S. Bank. I'm banned then from the CDN. The CDN is called the Content Delivery Network. That is how, that's one of the services where you could, like, if you want to do a live stream on your own website, you'll contact a CDN. I'm banned from the most prominent CDNs. I'm banned from the payment processors. I'm banned from just about anything you can think of. We have had to come up with some kind of so-called free speech, censorship-proof alternative solution. We've had to do some ad hoc kind of thing because that's the level, that's the pervasive level of censorship that goes on.
Doesn't Charlie Kirk, in my opinion, he qualifies in many ways as a fake conservative, a fake America Firster, if he even claims to be that. But he is on all these platforms. In other words, each one of these platforms, it wasn't like this just spread like some kind of a disease with you. And it's that each one of these little and big platforms had to consciously say, we're banning Nick Fuentes. It was a conscious decision on each of their parts.
Yes. And, you know, I'll give you one example of this. I am on one of these alternative payment platforms. It was called Entropy. And Entropy was this was a way that a lot of live streamers, a lot of podcasters could make money on their shows, and they would provide the service to anybody, even people like me, if you could believe it. So they already are like a free speech platform. Their payment processor, who is not one of the mainstream ones, it's one I had never even heard of, called them up and specifically referred to me. They said, if you don't take Nick Fuentes off your platform, if you don't ban his account, we will shut down payment processing for your entire operation by name. And they emailed me, and I know because I know the people that run it, and I've talked to them.
They probably had hundreds or thousands of people that they were servicing, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I'm by far not the only one on there, but by name, I was the only one mentioned.
Yeah.
And they told me, they said, well, we're really sorry because I remember I wasn't able to log in one day. And I remember thinking, that's weird. Maybe there's some kind of glitch. And I reached out and I saw they had sent me an email from that same morning and they said, hey, we're really sorry. And they told me exactly that story. And now they went to work and tried to offer me a different payment processor. They tried to set something up specifically for me. But that's the level. And I could give you a few stories just like that. Like you go on TikTok, quick one, you go on TikTok and you could search up my name and it will tell you that it cannot display the results because my name itself is a hate term.
Okay.
I mean, who else is on that? You search hashtag Nick Fuentes on TikTok and anyone can try it. It will tell you we cannot display the results because that's a hateful term.
Okay. Well, believe me, this is not haphazard, ladies and gentlemen. He is being targeted, and I think he's being targeted. He's organizing young people of all kinds who are America First, but he's focused on, focus may be the wrong word, but you're specifically encouraging young white Christian men to get involved, and that is what scares the daylights out of those running the shadow government, in my opinion.
That's it. That's exactly it. They want everybody to be sort of redirected away from everything that happened in the Trump Revolution. And they want all that redirected back into the same old, the
right.
Status quo, everything that has gone on for the past 30 years and ruined America. And
now, could I say something else? Because I always think of the people who are coming in here they haven't heard anybody mention white people in a favorable way, because you really, if you think about it, you're not allowed to do that in the mainstream media. You can say anything positive, which I'm all for, about blacks or Orientals or Hispanics if it's true. But I believe the Hispanic people and the white people of Anglos are natural allies, at least most of them I've ever known are great allies. But anyway, so, you know, the fact that they, that your people are hearing on this show were favorably mentioned white people. I always say, though, we can't be too proud of our race, because none of us picked what race we were going to be. And every individual has a soul that is of infinite value in the eyes of God. But so we recognize all that, and we're not against other races. Would you agree with what I just said there in the last 30, 40 seconds?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I knew you did. I just want to address those people who are thinking, these guys must be slave owners waiting to happen, which is another thing I think they try to convince, especially young white people and a lot of the minorities, is these white people, they're just slave owners waiting to happen. Nothing could be further from the truth. And I just wanted to get that out for people that might be wondering if we were closet slave owner, wannabe slave owners or white supremacists or something like that. Not true, but we want to have a fair accounting of history and of current events.
Yeah, I agree. And it's important. I think it is important to clarify, because you do get these intense smears and they try to make it something that it isn't.
Yeah.
This is the same. We have the same view, I think, that most people have when they're in their private homes and they're at dinner or they're at work, and they have, and we all know these conversations that happen in hushed tones, in company that you're comfortable with. We all know what's going on. It doesn't make us, we're not bad people. It's not hateful. It's not about any of that. We all understand what it means to be Christian and recognize that we're all equal under God and all created equal and so on. But we've just got to get to talking about the kinds of things that we all see every day. Like when I see what goes on in Chicago, when I turn on the nightly news every night in Chicago and you see the crime and the gangs, we know what's going on there. I mean, nobody needs to say anything more than that, other than we know what's going on there. And again, it's not about hate. It's not about anything other than we have to get our country right, and we have to be able to talk about the people in it and what's going on with the different kinds of people. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily have to have some kind of complex or pathology or something. It's just got to do with we have to be able to trust our own eyes and make sound judgments and sometimes generalities when we're talking about governing a large country such as ours. Every other country does it.
Yeah, and we are actually the friends of the black people shooting black people and the black people getting shot. We're trying to figure out how to make the country get away from that type of thing. Obviously, the major news media couldn't care less about the black people shooting black people in Chicago, but if they find a white cop who accidentally, I say accidentally, kills when he's shot at a young black man who is usually violently resisting arrest, then we got 2 days of the white guys, the demon, and the black guy's a hero, and he was just about to turn his life around. And I'm not saying all the incidents are with that, but most of them are with young black men violently resisting arrest. And I would like to ask Antifa and Black Lives Matter, are you for legalizing black men violently resisting arrest? Because that's most of the cases they pick up. Now, that what I just said is not racist. It's just a deplorable situation that we've got to talk about and oppose. And I can tell you this, though, Nick, from talking to white people over the last 2 or 3 years who are not political, if this comes up, they are seething at how the white people are being beaten down on. If I could get a fair count in this election, I believe I would get tens of thousands of votes and maybe win, because people are so fed up with the basically the Jewish-run media beating down on white people.
I agree. I think people are sick of it. That's why we got Trump. That's why we're getting the kind of open resistance to the New World Order that we're seeing. That's where you're getting these kinds of narratives emerging and people becoming more comfortable. And they're alarmed.
It just happened in France, and I believe – they do count the votes right over there. They count them on one day, but I'll bet you there was a lot of, because they don't have the filming. You need to film the ballots through the whole period to their count. I wonder if Le Pen won that or if she didn't come a lot closer than they said, because one of my friends said brilliantly 30 years ago, we're putting on bumper stickers, giving speeches, putting on radio commercials and all this. The other side is scheming to steal the election on election day. That's what they have thousands of people being trained to do in all throughout the year.
Yeah, and Republicans have abdicated this. You know,
oh, yes.
They have abdicated power. It's such a shame. We wonder why we don't get what we want. It's because Republicans are uninterested in governing. They're uninterested in using the government to get what they want, uninterested in using what they have to get what they want.
Right.
And you know, when I said, you brought it up earlier at my conference, that America First would rule America, that, like you said, that's the kind of thing that needs to be said more, is we've got to have an eye and a stated goal of making the country the way we want it to be. We've got to govern the country and make the country the way we want it to be, because if we don't, somebody else will. And that is really what's gone on for the past half century, is other people, other than Christian, conservative, decent people. And that is why you see the kind of filth in the culture. That's why you see everything's dirty. That's why you see the mass immigration, everything that's going on. That's because the responsible people they've been derelict in their responsibilities, and we've let other people take the mantle, make the decisions, shape the country, and then we're shocked at the outcome and say, how did our country end up this way? Well, you know, I think all the Republicans were saying, oh, I got to get up to work in the morning. I can't go to some protest. And like, don't get me wrong, I understand that mentality, but you can't then be surprised when the people that are going to work to destroy America wind up winning, you know, everybody
right,
see
right.
What's going on. So,
and really, if there wasn't just a few of us fighting, there's all these retired people, every American, and we talk about this in some of our conference calls and Zoom type things. Most people in America would need to put in 30 to 40 hours a year. And we urge people to get involved in the precinct system, where you can then overthrow the party leaders and then change the Congress. And doing stuff like that, 30, 40 hours a year for any healthy person in the United States is not asking a lot. If we were saying 40 hours a week, it would be ridiculous, but it's not. It's 30 to 40 hours a year of millions of patriotic people working together. Most people are frustrated, but they don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's just it. And that's where America First comes in, is trying to provide some leadership and some direction for people that are dissatisfied and again, not getting what they need in terms of the leadership. They're not getting a viewpoint. They're not getting information and opinion, and they're not getting direction and leadership from the people that are currently on TV and the people that are currently leading in Congress or anywhere else in the party. It's very difficult. You can really find maybe one or two exceptions. I look at Donald Trump. I look at Tucker Carlson. I look at two guys trying to make a difference, and everybody else, I don't see really a whole lot of daylight between them and the liberals.
Have you ever heard of the late great congressman from Youngstown, Jim Traficant?
I have not, no.
Okay, Traficant was blocked from our view by the media for his whole career. He was probably killed in 2014. Look for James Traficant, a tribute. It's 6 minutes, but he was the John Wayne of Congress. And this is another reason why I say the media is creating treason by censoring people, leaders like you who need to be heard. And Traficant was the most entertaining guy in Congress for 20 years. Rush Limbaugh, he's the only guy Rush Limbaugh would have on as a guest once a year, because Rush got such a kick out of him. And he fought the IRS. He fought everybody. But anyway, James Traficant, a tribute. Now, Nick, I want you to say anything else you want to say, but I want to tell people now. So we got Nicholas J. Fuentes. You can catch him every night, weekday nights as a rule, on cozy.tv, not cozy.com, cozy.tv, which is really easy to remember, COZY.TV. You're also on Gab, which is a free speech, what are they, competitor of Twitter?
Yes.
Okay. Gab is, I'm about to get on there, at least I'm on there. I got to learn what I'm doing on there. But Gab is where we should all go, because it is run by a tremendous guy who spoke at your conference. His name is Andrew Tolden.
Torba, Andrew Torba.
Andrew Torbo, and he's running this Gab and keeping it alive. And we mainly wanted to do this show so that you know, a million people would hear of you. The ad has cozy.tv on it, and your name and so forth. Is there anything else that you wanted? I think we got the general story out, but is there anything else you wanted to tell us before we close down this program?
Well, I think we covered it all. I think we really covered the whole story and everything that goes on. And I just want to say thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And good luck in the race. You know, I hope come November we'll have a good result. So thank you so much.
Well, listen, one other thing. I want to ask you a question before we go. You seem to be safe at Cozy TV and Gab and some of the other few other things. What worries me about the future is the other side just creating a false flag, maybe setting off a nuclear bomb near St. Louis or something, God forbid, and just shutting down the whole internet. What do you feel like we're safe to be able to communicate in the months and years ahead, or how do you look at the obvious reality that the deep state, the shadow government, is trying to get control of more and more of discourse in the United States?
Well, that's a good question. I think that if something on that scale happened, I think we'd honestly have bigger problems, probably.
Yes.
I think that would, you know, that would totally change.
Yes. Yes.
That would change everything. But the premise is important, which is what will communications look like in the future? And I think that it has the possibility to get very bad, like total control, like we're talking.
Yeah.
You know, they pull the plug on and anybody that even has a website, you know, maybe even pull the plug on your phone. But I think we're a little bit of a ways away from that. And my experience has been that the censorship has evolved and the counter censorship has also evolved with it. And so it's really just a matter of, we don't need the perfect solution. We just need to stay ahead. And so I'm always just trying to stay ahead of the latest tactic. And while at the same time working on something that is, you know, more permanent, but there's only so far it can go. Ultimately, they have the capital. They control the towers and everything. So
you have, in your short career compared to mine and many other people's, you're trying to solve this thing peacefully. I've been trying since 1972 to save the Constitution of the Bill of Rights peacefully. But I really think at the moment those old dead white men, the founding fathers, have outsmarted the would-be tyrants by the Second Amendment. And they know that there's 300 million guns out here. I am foremost in saying we don't want to go to another civil war. But I think they got to think when they start to act that the 300 million guns are still in the hands of the American people. And I always say, if they start making people hungry with phony shortages, they're not going to be facing nice guys like you and me. They're going to be facing good old boys who shoot first and ask questions later. And I think that's holding them back from doing what they would do if they had our guns. I think they would be moving a lot more quickly.
I agree. Yeah, the Second Amendment is crucial, but I, you know, our goal is to try and do it peacefully. I think any violence would be extremely destructive and tragic, and you know, and we don't want it to get there. We just want the promise of the Bill of Rights, the Constitution of our founding fathers, and I think it is achievable. I think Trump showed it's achievable without, you know, anything that would anything criminal or anything like that. But
it might not even be criminal, but anything, we want to avoid anything violent because I think we can still do it peacefully. We agree on that. So, Nicholas J. Fuentes, it's been an honor, a pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm going to be following you and watching your podcast, so I wish you God's blessings in the future as you move forward.
Well, thank you so much, and God bless you, too. It was really great talking to you.
Okay, Nick, thanks.
All right, thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.